Hi everyone, welcome to Podchat Live. We are here on the 26th of March 2024. We are recording episode 119. As always, we've got a few research papers to talk about. We've actually got a few messages, a few shout outs to give as well. So without further ado, I will say hello to my co-host Craig, and I will, as always, invite him to give us his little shoe fact for the week.
Hey, well, good morning and good evening in your case. The shoe fact this week was sent in by Jason McCanley, who is at JMC Podiatry on Instagram, and this was the Speedland running shoes. Now, Speedland are what I'd call one of the one percenters in the running shoe market. They've been around for a while. They're one of the good one percenters. But what was interesting about one of their particular shoes, the GS Oak, and we'll put a link to it, is they come with an optional carbon fiber plate. This carbon fiber plate is an extra $35 on top of the purchase of the shoe, and it attaches under the insole in the shoe, allegedly to convert it into a super shoe. I have no idea how effective it is, and certainly be interested in any comments that anyone might have on it, but I'll put a link to it. So that's the shoe fact for this week.
Well, it is interesting, isn't it? Because we don't have any longitudinal data about the possible effects of running, all of your runs in a carbon-plated shoe. We know they're not very durable. We know that people are using them just for race day. But then it means, you have to get a training companion. So, and the running shoe companies have been very clever about providing us with training companions. But this could be potentially a shoe where you have it as a easy day, recovery, long, slow run shoe, and then for your tempo threshold and race day, pop in a carbon plate and you've upgraded it.
Of course. I it'd be interesting to see how it goes.
I wonder if any
I mean, the cost of
big boys will follow suit.
Yeah, I look. I have been shown some samples from one of the larger companies of a sort of temporary carbon fiber plate. That was a year or two ago now. Nothing's come of it as far as I can see, but people are thinking about it. People are working on it. What comes to market? It's a very, very different sort of kettle of fish.
Absolutely. Watch this space. Right, let's press on. First shout, at the end of it, or during episodes, and normally at the end, I often encourage people to reach out to us, to message us on our social media channels at Podchat Live, to send us personal messages, to send us emails. And when they do, I like to sort of, my way of saying thank you for doing so is to give them a bit of a shout out. And we've got a couple of shout outs to do this week. First one's a really important one, and this is from Emily Sharp, who is based up in the lovely Sheffield, in the UK, at LR Podiatry. With her mum, who's also a podiatrist, a shout out to Louise Rini as well. They're both absolutely lovely. And Emily left us a really, really nice message. She graduated last summer. She also had a baby in November, so she's currently on maternity leave. And she mentions that she had a sort of a big fear that she was going to feel out of the loop, being a new grad and then going straight on maternity leave. Is she going to be out of the loop with podiatry? And she says that our little 20-minute episodes every week, just enough to squeeze into an incredibly busy life, which I'm sure she has. She listens to it every week. She goes out with the dog and the baby in the carrier. And she just wanted to say thanks for all we're doing, that she loves the podcast. And also I should probably say, and Emily may not know this, or she may remember this, but she's sort of the reason that we came back. She may not remember, but I bumped into her and had a brief chat with her and her mum in Oxford at the Run 3D conference, and that was in October last year, while we were still on our hiatus. And Emily actually said to me, "I really miss your podcast," because obviously we'd had a pause at episode 99. She said, "I really miss your podcast. I loved it during my student days." She didn't really say much more, but it got me thinking. And it was only within a few weeks that I'd message you saying, "I think we should bring this back." And she was sort of the catalyst for bringing it back. So she may not know that, but big shout out to Emily. Thank you for your lovely comments. Sort of thanks to you that we've come back as well. So that's great. And I love the idea of students or new grads or people on maternity or paternity leave, squeezing us into their busy day. That's just awesome. That's kind of why we do it, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is.
So thank you, Emily. Really appreciate it. Second shout out is to Michael Stevenson, who some of you may know, if you're based in the UK. He's been heavily involved in the Royal College. He also runs or sort of spearheads Tomorrow's Podiatry. So shout out for that, and go and check those out if you're not familiar with it. And he sent me a message saying he loves the new format. It's always on the top of his playlist when it comes out. And also, his team at work, who are usually quite research shy, have requested that they put items from our podcast on their monthly meetings, which I think is really awesome too. So big shout out to Michael and to his team, which is AA Podiatry in Glasgow in Scotland. I love hearing these messages. They make me feel good. They give me the fuzzies. Please do keep sending them in, because we don't get paid for this. So this is our payment, giving us the warm, fuzzy feelings.
The only comment I make about that, I did see Emily's message, but I did see someone responded saying that she hadn't heard of us before. I won't name them, but I sort of thought, shame on you,
No, as
but
we've said before, that's our fault. That's not their fault. That's our fault. So the more people like Emily that can shout about us, it means that we don't have to shout about ourselves because that makes us feel uncomfortable. But no, I saw that comment, that reply too, made me smile and made me sad in equal measure. Last thing before we'll talk about the articles, we always see if something is podiatry related has been in the news or in the mainstream media or social media. This one's about as mainstream as media can get. And we have a new TV show in the UK. It started last week. It is on every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. on the channel, which is called Really. And this is Channel 17 on Freeview. And it's called The Bad Foot Clinic. Now, Craig's aware of this. It doesn't have that channel, but you've got a YouTube link, I believe, Craig, that we're going to link to so that people who are not in the UK can also watch this as well. And it's essentially our UK version of My Feet Are Killing Me, which we did a previous episode with Brad and Ebony from that as well. Have you watched it yet, Craig? Did you manage to see it? Watch the link.
I have actually seen the whole episode. It is available in Australia for those who have Apple Plus TV.
Oh, you can get on Apple as well, can you? Great.
But also, but what's on YouTube is a 20 minute version of that episode. So it's an edited version
Highlight,
down,
like
but
a bit like
I'll link to it.
so on YouTube you can get a bit like the match of the day highlights, so to speak.
Well, it's a 20 minute version, so it's still reasonably,
Yeah, I think it was an
not not.
hour. It was an hour long here, and it's on every Wednesday. I'm not sure I'm going to watch it every week. I'll lay my cards on the table. I don't really watch this kind of stuff usually. I find myself getting a little bit frustrated with it because it's a bit, this isn't anything to do with the people on it, but it's a bit sensationalist, and they cut out things that I find really interesting, like taking patient histories. They just dive straight in and start talking about treatments, and some of the treatments are potentially dubious. But I need to give a shout out to my good friend and colleague, Dr. Ian Riley, podiatric surgeon. He's a friend of our show. He was on episode 9 of Podchat Live, which we recorded 6 years ago now. Go back and look at that one. He did an episode for us talking about injection therapy. I've known Ian personally for probably 20 years. He's taught me pharmacology in my second year undergrad in 2001. And now consider him a very close friend, colleague, and just general all round great guy. And his bit on it was incredible, Craig, if you saw it.
Oh, I did, yeah. Look, I like you. I tend not to watch shows like that because you've got. I'd rather watch the footy or something, but I often get worried they're going to be a bit cringeworthy. But I did watch this one because it was the first one, and I actually didn't think it was too bad. I thought the is it Marion and Dr. Kenny, and Ian, they did well, Again, the editing does tend to sensationalize it, but I didn't cringe, which was
No, that's a good start. That's a good start, isn't it? My wife was watching with me, and she saw Ian doing some of his magic, his surgery, and she was like, "Wow, this guy's doing like really helping people." Like, not you know, I think I'm almost certain she looked at me and now thinks a little bit less of me because I don't help people like that. What I do is just nothing even close to that. And I did feel a little bit inferior as a clinician and as a man. And I've texted Ian and told him that in so many words as well. So yep, give it a look, check it out. It's called The Bad Foot Clinic. I don't know what it's going to be like. I don't know that I'm going to check it out every week, but maybe if we catch another episode and there's something interesting on it, we'll talk about it again in the future. Right, let's get on with the research. As always, there's been an amazing amount published in the last 7 days. We have I guess, handpicked the two or three here that we think are of interest, that are fairly diverse across our profession. And we will start with a paper published 5 days ago, so 21st of March. It was published by a group of researchers from Tunisia. It was published in Foot and Ankle Surgery, and it's entitled Foot Involvement in Psoriatic Arthritis: Prevalence, Clinical and Radiological Features. I'm sure most people know psoriatic arthritis is one of the sort of spondyloarthropathies that affects under 1% of the general population, but will affect 20 to 30% of patients who have psoriasis. This was a study which took 40 patients with psoriatic arthritis. It was cross-sectional in nature, and it looked over a previous 12-month period, and it looked at sort of clinical examination findings, X-rays of their feet and their heels, ultrasound scan findings, etc. Now, what it found was that there is foot involvement in 95% of cases. There's dermatological manifestations in 45% of cases. There's dactylitis, which is also known as sausage toe. I've always enjoyed that word, in 17.5%. And for me, it was just a lovely reminder. And I think for me, the big take home here is that given the foot involvement can also include things like enthesitis, synovitis, what we would potentially consider musculoskeletal presentations. Even someone like me who doesn't do anything other than musculoskeletal and sports work, I don't see dermatological patients or routine care. We should be asking every single patient we see about their family history and about whether they have psoriasis, regardless of their presenting lower limb complaint. I think that was a lovely reminder of just the prevalence of this, Craig.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was a simple cross-sectional study. They made no claims that were unjustified, and just reminded us just how common those foot complications are. They obviously used the ultrasound detection of some of them, but which puts the prevalence of some of them a bit higher than previous studies. But I don't have an issue with that, and I think it's quite striking. Literally. Well, 95, almost 100% of cases of psoriasis had foot involvement.
Yeah.
So it's a very timely reminder.
Absolutely. So ask all your patients during the medical history taking whether they have a history or whether they suffer with psoriasis or there's a family history, all of the usual inflammatory flag type screening questions. A lovely timely reminder of just how important that component of our history taking is. Okay, next paper. This was published 4 days ago, 22nd of March. It was published by a group of researchers from India and Saudi Arabia, and it was published in the Clinical Epidemiology and Global Health Journal. And it is called The Impact of Intrinsic Foot Muscle Strengthening Exercises in Asymptomatic Athletes with Normal Foot Structure, a Systematic Review. Now, before we kind of get into the weeds of kind of exactly what they did or some of the limitations as I see them, let's just go straight to the main finding. Because I know with a paper like this, when you look at something like intrinsic foot muscle strengthening, as soon as people see that in the title, particularly on social media nowadays, they'll probably dive straight there and they'll look at the last paragraph of the abstract. And this may well fit their narrative. So as soon as they see this, they'll happily then retweet it and shout about it without really looking more deeply at it. The take home from this is that the findings of this study, of this systematic review, suggest that intrinsic foot muscle exercises effectively improve outcomes such as foot morphology, that's shape, foot function, strength, running mechanics, and subjective function in athletes, and they may be incorporated into sports rehabilitation. So I think that's a conclusion that already some people will really, really like. If they're already so inclined, I can just see the Instagram and TikTok generation going wild for this and posting loads of things about it. A couple of things to note that I will mention before I hand over to you, Craig, as I skimmed it, things that jumped out at me. It's a systematic review, which, as we know, is level one evidence. It takes all of the studies on a certain subject, brings them all together, pulls all the data, hopefully, checks them for quality first. This only had four studies in it. Now, the reason isn't because there's only four studies that have looked at intrinsic foot muscle strengthening. It's because of how specific they wanted this search to be. So they excluded well, as you can see in the title, it was asymptomatic athletes. So they excluded all symptomatic people. They excluded anyone with pathology. They excluded anyone they considered not to be an athlete. So, and they excluded anyone, and you know, that didn't have what they considered a normal foot structure. So only four studies. They were all quite different to each other in the way they were designed and in the exercises they'd given. And as such, and when all of that stuff, although that data looks very different, that's what we call heterogeneous data. They could not do a meta-analysis because it's a bit like comparing bits of fruit, but you're not comparing four apples. You're comparing an apple, an orange, a pear, and a banana. So there was too much heterogeneity in the data that they couldn't do a meta-analysis. So the thing that immediately jumps out at me, Craig, is they've said in the conclusion that intrinsic foot muscle exercises may be incorporated into rehabilitation. And I just don't know how you get there when one of your key exclusion criteria was that everyone in this had no pain and what you considered a normal foot. This is a group of people that you wouldn't normally give any intervention for.
Oh yeah, I'm biting my tongue. I'm rolling my
No, don't.
eyes.
As I've always said, no one wants you to bite your tongue.
Well, one, why would you want to treat an asymptomatic athlete with a normal foot structure anyway, with something with intrinsic foot muscle strengthening or orthotics or anything, if they've got no symptoms and they've got normal foot structure? Like it's just extraordinary that they'll reach that conclusion. Not a week goes by in which there isn't a study published on intrinsic muscle short foot exercise. And most of them are fatally flawed. I mean, they're able to include four. I'd hate to think how many they went through to get to those four. The risk of bias in so many of these studies is quite extraordinary. Now, that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the short foot exercise, intrinsic muscle strengthening. It's just that the research that gets done on them is well below par, and the strength of the conclusions that get made from not only this review but others is quite extraordinary when you look at what they actually did and set out to do.
So we'll link to it, give it a read. But as always with these studies, I guess that what Craig and I are always trying to do when we highlight these studies is to say, maybe just don't take the conclusions at face value, get into the weeds a little bit and take a look at some of the limitations. Right, we've got one more paper to do, and I reckon we've just about got time to do it. This was published yesterday. So it was published on the 25th of March from a group of researchers in the United States, and it was published in the Journal of Ultrasound in Medicine. So unsurprisingly, given the journal's name, it is about ultrasound. It is called Youth Athletes with Sever's Disease Exhibit Altered Achilles Tendon Ultrasound Characteristics, a Retrospective Case Control Study. I'll quickly say what they did, and then we can let Craig off the leash because I know he's got a few things to say about this one. It was a retrospective chart review, so they didn't re they looked at notes and records, you know, from a period of time. I think it was a 10-year period of time in the past. 46 patients, 23 had Sever's disease. I'm doing inverted commas with my fingers. Calcaneal apophysitis, probably a better term there. And they had a mean age of 12 and a half years old. And then we had 23 controls who did not have calcaneal apophysitis, mean age of about 16 years old. They looked at the ultrasound-derived degree of tendon thickening, the Achilles tendon thickness in centimeters, its cross-sectional area. And they concluded that young athletes with Sever's disease had a significantly greater degree of tendon thickening with a large effect compared to healthy controls. Their real take home here was that their study supported incorporating diagnostic ultrasound as part of a comprehensive examination to ensure appropriate diagnosis and clinical management for adolescents with heel pain. So a couple of things for me. Firstly, I don't see adolescents that much. I know we've got several listeners who do. I'm really looking forward to JW's message in the morning after he's listened to this episode. Even I think I'm pretty okay at delineating between calcaneal apophysitis and Achilles tendinopathy, just from a clinical diagnosis perspective. My immediate thought here, I dove into the background of the researchers because when something supports the use of diagnostic ultrasound so sort of broadly, my gut feeling was always follow the money. Is there some kind of conflict of interest, some kind of financial link with some of these authors and ultrasound machines, ultrasound companies? Personally, I have to say, have to admit, couldn't find any link. But that was my gut feeling. Craig, I know when you sent me this one, you said, I've got some thoughts about this. Let's hear them.
Again, well, let's just say I'm biting my tongue, but I'm not necessarily rolling my eyes this time. That is retrospective. So they found what they found, and it is an interesting finding. The Achilles tendon was thicker in those with a calcaneal apophysitis. So two possible reasons for that. One, it's part of the cause, or it's part of the pathogenesis. Maybe the apophysis was overloaded, the Achilles was overloaded, or, and more likely, is they're in pain. They started limping, and that irritated the Achilles tendon. So what they possibly found is limping. And then to draw this conclusion that we need to use a diagnostic ultrasound as part of a what they say comprehensive exam to ensure the appropriate diagnosis and clinical management. I mean, that's an extraordinary leap from the results that they got. So it's not uncommon to say find that. And I certainly recall a study I blogged about maybe 10 years ago that looked at gluteal function and those with Achilles tendinopathy, and it got a lot of mileage in social media. Using EMG, they showed those with Achilles tendinopathy had altered gluteal function. It's limping. Of course, the gluteals are going to function differently because they're in pain and they're walking differently. And I suspect that's what they've found here. They've just found a thickened Achilles because the kids are in got some symptoms and they're walking differently. And I certainly see no need to start using diagnostic ultrasound to assess these people. It's still an interesting finding, something to be aware of, but it was retrospective.
I wonder whether it's just we're more likely to see severs in people that are very, very active, and maybe people that are very, very active have slightly different tendon structure. I also wonder whether there's been a bit of because, like, when you look retrospective here, it's almost like you can look at all the data you've got and then you can decide your hypothesis. They call it harking, don't they? Hypothesis after results, after results known. I wonder whether they look back at all the data they had from a group of people from a period of time and went, what can we see here? And then we'll sort of work out our hypothesis after that.
Well,
Again, may, may,
what
maybe being unfair.
yeah, no, I think what a neat conclusion would be, we did the study, we looked at the Achilles tendon and those with and without calcaneal apophysitis. This is what we found. This is of interest. There are two possible mechanisms. We don't know which one it is. Perhaps we now need a prospective study to see to test this hypothesis further. That would be a more appropriate kind of conclusion to make.
Yeah,
But to say we need to start using,
not sure we need to diagnose sculpture on every adolescent that comes in with a barn door clinical presentation of calcaneal apophysitis. Let's round up because we're hitting our time, and you know how what a stickler I am for keeping these episodes brief. Thank you again to everyone that's messaged us. Big shout out to Emily. Hello to any new listeners that we may have picked up off the back of Emily's lovely message. We may have at least one because she said she'd never heard of us and was going to check us out. So please do like us, share us, subscribe, all the things that you do in this day and age with podcasts. We are on all social media channels. Podchat Live is our handle. Our email, if you want to message us about anything, is getinvolved@podchatlive.com. Apple ratings, Spotify ratings, reviews. We welcome it all and we look forward to doing it all again next week. Thanks, Craig.
Okay, thanks, Ian, and we'll see you and everyone next week.